This week on Countdown to Infinity, we discuss maybe the best Marvel movie of all time in the MCU, The Winter Soldier. The full title, obviously, is Captain America Winter Soldier, but realistically, it's all about Bucky. We love Bucky, we love his metal arm, and goddamn do we love his spy-y, shooty, fighty ways. This is Countdown to Infinity, and this is Captain America, The Winter Soldier.
Welcome back to Countdown to Infinity. This week we're talking about Captain America, The Winter Soldier.
And it's just me and Eamon. We're alone in the studio. We're naked. Who knows from the waist down.
Yeah. Dav's back. He was obviously absent last week.
Sorry, I had some stuff to do. Some songs to finish. But I'm back now and I'm ignoring the world of music.
I am going to have to apologise. In a previous episode, I made a bit of a boo-boo. I got really excited to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy.
But it's all right. Because we get to talk about this movie.
I know, but I feel bad that I got everybody hyped up for Guardians of the Galaxy and we're talking about Winter Soldier. But it's not a bad consolation prize, really, is it? One of the best Marvel movies.
Let's jump straight into it. Let's go from it. Let's break down the characters, talk about the movie as a whole, and go from there. The movie opens, and we just have a beautiful moment right from the off of Captain America meeting Sam Wilson.
Yeah.
Like, it is so pure. This one scene could have been so jingoistic and so, booyah, get me a bald eagle. But it, do you know what I mean? It was perfectly done. It was
patriotic, but with nuance.
Yeah, like, on your left, on your left, on your... It was so good. And he's like, you know, I'm Captain Rogers. And he goes, yeah, I could have worked that out. Kind of thing. I love that moment so much.
This is the moment that we all fell in love with Sam Wilson.
Yeah, absolutely.
He had that slightly cocky but kind of almost downtroddenness to him next to Captain America. Do you know what I mean? It's like how the regular guy is going to sit next to Captain America and just be like,
I obviously knew we were going to get the Falcon, and I was stoked that it was Anthony Mackie doing it. Like, I love him, but I had a proper freak out. Like, I loved this moment because it's really weird. Like, I know we've said before, like, Captain America, the trilogy, as it were, is some of my favorites in the MCU, but I wasn't a big Captain America fan. And where I came into it was the arc where Sam had taken over the mantle for a little bit. I think it was in, like, when it kind of went to Ultimates.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And I really, I got into Captain America as Sam, Captain America, and it wasn't until I went back that I was like, oh wow, like, this is, that means even more so instantly from the word go. I'd only had one Captain America movie before this and the Avengers movie, but I was like, we're actually gonna do it. But then this is all based on Brubaker's run on Winter Soldier and bringing him back and making it Bucky and stuff like that, so,
which is a phenomenal storyline.
How amazing is it, and how deep as do they want to make it go when in one movie you're introducing the two other possible Captain Americas?
I mean, it's pretty with most fans, we're all sat there. I mean, we were all sat there in First Avenger when Bucky picked it up, like, oh shit, we all know what that means.
Yeah.
But with this, we're given an endless amount of possibilities with the future of Captain America. I mean, because we kind of already knew that Civil War might be on the horizon, we were all kind of at it in our heads that Cap might die. And here we are being introduced to more Captain Americas that could pick up his shield.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Like, it was a huge moment for me. So they've just finished. They've had that little bit of interaction. I love the way that Steve Rogers is played, pulling out his notebook, writing it down. He portrays so subtly that he is not of this world. And I know they have that part where he's like writing down different stuff he's missed, but it reminded me, and this is going to sound really weird, reminded me of Austin Powers. Okay, because there is, through all of the comic book and joking of Austin Powers, there's a really beautiful moment where he realizes what he's missed, and it's like a real sad moment, and Mike Myers plays it so well that you're in this slapstick comedy, and for a moment you have a real emotional response to this man not seeing any of that.
Yeah.
I thought, without going that into it, it was perfectly done. It was perfectly done. And he's a gentleman, and he is, you know, he is of that era through and through.
I think that in itself comes all the way through this film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right from his mistaking different readings of Agent 13 and Black Widow. He's a little bit, I don't know what to do with myself, almost.
He's like a little child.
Yeah.
But
child that has superpowers and a patriotic costume.
I think that the overarching thing for Steve Rogers in this movie is that more so than the birth of Steve Rogers in the first Avenger, more so than the potential leader of the Avengers in Avengers, we really see here that without being contrived, without being really unrelatable, mm-hmm. he is just honorable on every sense of the word. He has morals and he will stick to them. Chris Evans played that so well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And what I did like is his chemistry with the majority of the cast.
Yeah.
There's not a moment where he doesn't feel uneasy with everybody. No. Even if they're a villain, he's perfect in every scene. If you took him out, put one of the other potential Captain America actors, for example, Jensen Ackles from Supernatural, if you'd have put him in one of these scenes, he would not have gelled. And I think partially that comes from Chris Evans' involvement with the rest of the MCU.
Black Widow picks him up. I thought it was really funny, like he was getting picked up from school. Like, do you know?
Yeah, because she texts him.
It's so
meet
school.
You on the curb.
Yeah, so she picks him up. He got Black Widow being flirty, which I didn't like. It was with Sam. Like, what's,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But that's just her being super spy. And then it takes us onto the mission. This is where we're first introduced to Rumlow, who, if you're into the comic books, we know eventually becomes Crossbones. And we see him in Civil War at the beginning. But this mission is great for three reasons, yeah? And I'm going to give you my rundown of why I love this opening scene, yeah? The jump out the aeroplane without the parachute.
It's so cool.
it's something almost, so simple.
There's almost something James Bondian to it. It's the super spy element of the film. So he jumps out pretty nonchalantly and straight into the water.
Like, and then one of the other guys is like, did he have a parachute? And then Rumlow is like, he did not. Like,
it's just so cool. It's all so suave.
This movie is set up, and we spoke about this before we started recording. This movie, even on those superhero moments, up until maybe the last 15, 20 minutes of this movie, did not ever feel like a superhero movie. I felt like I was in a spy movie. I felt like I was in James Bond.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen James Bond do stunts, like jump out of a plane without a parachute. Like, you know, there are rumors of paratroopers being able to do those you know, terminal velocity jumps where they jump straight into the water and open their parachutes for a minute. So it felt real. But the main reason why I love this opening one is because we're getting Black Widow the spy. Like, she is fantastic in this opening scene, establishing a world right from the off that this is going to twist, this is going to turn, you're never going to know what to think. And that's what this movie does so perfectly, is that you never know which way you're looking.
Yeah, because it's clearly saying that there's plot within a plot, because she's on a mission within a mission. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely,
so it's already signifying, even if you're not fully aware of it, that this film is going to take you in some very interesting directions, which it does later on.
I feel like you hit the nail on the head when you said Manchurian Candidate, but I feel like this movie is Manchurian Candidate meets Heat. Like, I really feel like it's those merging of like kind of like heist, investigation, stroke, political, espionage. It felt like that to me. It felt like I was in like late 70s, early 80s style of storytelling. Yeah. And I think that's what made it real more than anything else. Like, so once we've got back from there, that instantly Steve Rogers' morality comes out.
Yes.
In Nick Fury's face, like,
what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, she's got a mission. I need to know the mission. Yeah. It's setting up, wait a second. If Black Widow's done this, what else has she done? And Steve Rogers even says that. He's like, you know, what other missions has she had that I don't know about? And it's the helicarrier reveal that is so poignant for Steve Rogers. It works for Ultron later. It works for Captain America Civil War after that. It's such a moment where Nick Fury is like, thinks that by showing these helicarriers to Steve Rogers, it's going to be like, okay, cool, I know why we're doing this now. But instantly he shuts it down. He's like, all you're doing is pointing a gun on the world.
Yeah, like, I mean, so Project Insight for those of you that aren't fully familiar with what we're talking about, is three giant helicarriers that are decked out with hundreds and hundreds of guns that can take out hostiles.
And arc reactors. That can stay permanently in the air.
Yes. So it could be, you know, a world security force if needed. That will play into the plot later on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, like you say, it's Steve's instant reaction where, like, you know, this isn't security. This is a threat. And I think everybody kind of realizes that just by the Jesus Christ number of weapons on it that it showcases.
I thought that was really interesting as well, is that throughout this movie, I know it's a Disney movie, but it doesn't pull any punches. There is a lot of death.
Like, there is a lot of death, and there is a lot of instances where you think that person is not getting up. At all.
Yeah, look, what I found really weird about this, and I'm going to deviate slightly. When Man of Steel came out, everyone kicked off about the fact that Superman kills Zod.
Yeah, and
Spoiler alert!
I thought that was an interesting way they did with Batman v Superman, though. They looked at the ramifications of the working man.
But everyone went nuts.
Fight.
The Boy Scout killed someone.
Yeah,
the Boy
dude.
Scout killed someone, yeah?
Yeah.
In this movie, straight up from the word go, Captain America is putting bullets in people left, right, and center. Like, when he hits that ship, he's punching them, but then he's throwing shields at people in effort. Sticks in walls. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? He's shooting people. Like, he's hitting grenades back into people.
Yeah.
He is killing people.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And that, don't overlook that. Mm. Because that is, he's killing people because he feels it's what's needed to do in order for people to be safe.
Yeah.
So when that scene happens then with Nick Fury, you've got to understand that if this is a man that's willing to stand up to the head of his organizer, he's not someone who's just taking orders and go, no, fuck you, this is wrong. Like, he's thinking in the back of the head, what have I killed these people for?
Yeah,
like,
have they died for nothing, essentially? Have they died purely to get this memory stick that Scarlett Johansson has found? That's quite a weighty responsibility that he has to go through and has to fully understand, especially during the reveal of this film. Mm. We'll talk about that in a bit. I think that's one of the biggest things that they don't really address that much. Steve Rogers having to deal with that on his conscience is, I think, one of the biggest things driving him throughout the movie.
Well, there's a really poignant scene where it's him and Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, I'll give you all three of her names, are driving. He goes, you know, people have died, people have given their lives for nothing. Mm. And she's like, you learn to live with it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've done things that are bad, you learn to live with it.
Yeah.
Again, gets you excited. But to go back, like, the Nick Fury thing, like, he plays the perfect anti-hero. Like, and more so than this movie. Like, do you actually like Nick Fury? Because I don't think you're meant to.
No,
like, you're not meant to like Nick Fury. You're meant to not hate him. You know that he's coming at it from the Tony Stark point of view.
Yeah.
He says, like, a lot of stuff's gone down. We need to be ready. And he goes, we're ready for the first time in years.
Yeah.
Like, we can protect the world.
But
and
it says a lot about Nick Fury that one of his first responses is to load helicarriers with a huge amount of weapons and just have them in the air. Because
Permanently.
Because if they can be taken control of, for example, you know what I mean? The ramifications would be devastating.
I think one of the only negatives, and we've arrived there, that I kind of, there was a moment where, when they're taking down the helicarriers at the end, where I thought, okay, they're really easy to take down. Like, and I thought, and for me, I was like, okay, so this isn't a perfect plan, Nick Fury. Like, and and it kind of took me out a bit, because I'm like, Nick Fury would have never greenlit something that could be that easy. Because if those guns can do that, like, someone like the Hulk could destroy those helicarriers and they're going to come down onto cities and destroy cities. And so, but apart from that, like, but that is a negative for me. It's a plot hole that I just don't think they've built Nick Fury up to be like eight moves ahead in chess, and that just doesn't make sense to me. He would have been thinking about that.
Oh, yeah. Like, but I think we need to move on to one of the most important parts of this film, and that is Bucky Barnes.
Oh, but we get 4 minutes of Bucky Barnes, and then we don't see him again for 45 minutes. And that's great. We'll get on to why we don't see him for 45 minutes. That scene, though, where Steve Rogers is chasing him and he catches a shield.
Mm-hmm. That's... In the cinema, I was I yelped.
What are you talking? Woo! Like that. I literally did that.
It took my breath, man. I was so impressed by the... Yeah, partly because of the camera work and the way that it cuts straight to Bucky's eyes. Sorry, the Winter Soldier's eyes.
Because, you know, granted, like you if you were a nerd, you probably read, oh, it's Sebastian Stan. We know who it is.
And you call this film The Winter Soldier.
Yeah, the movie's called The Winter Soldier. If you've read any of Brubaker's run, you know that it's Bucky. Yeah. He even looks like Sebastian Stan.
Oh,
so
yeah,
hard.
Yeah,
great casting. But yeah, that moment is so impressive. Like, so impressive. And it's only made more impressive by the fact that it's almost like a Thor moment from Ultron. You know?
Yes. You where know? It's the oh shit.
Yeah.
Like, this shouldn't be able to happen.
Only I'm allowed to grab that shield.
Yeah,
like, and
yeah.
You can see it, like Steve Rogers plays it so well. Like, it's just, there is a moment where he's like,
fuck.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know he doesn't like strong language, but you know that's just what went through.
And then later on, there's that beautiful scene where Bucky picks up the shield and he's got the shield on the metal arm. And I was like, that is the deepest of cuts.
Yeah,
like,
but going back to the first time we see the Winter Soldier as Nick Fury is shot, when we see Steve running through all these offices, it's fucking great. Alongside the score and him just blasting through doors and walls.
That's the only time when it really does feel fantastical with Steve Rogers in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, because he is running through walls.
Like, you get the feeling that that is him using nearly his full extent of his powers.
Because although he has issues with Nick Fury, like,
he's still an ally.
And it's still his friend.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He does consider him a friend. Yeah. Like, so up until this point, we're in a Marvel movie, yeah? That whole chase scene with Nick Fury and the car where he's being shot at, it's great. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is pure Marvel, that is pure spectacle. The part where they're trying to battering ram his car and then he's like, hold, and then the minigun in the car.
Yeah.
It's all great. And that first Winter Soldier scene where he fires the magnetic mine under his car and flips it, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
And the design on that arm is stunning. Like, it
looks
like he has a cybernetic arm.
But I love the way that he sidesteps the van as it comes hurtling past him after the explosion. That shot is fucking incredible.
It's incredible. So we go from that, and then there's a scene where Agent 13 is like, oh, you left your stereo on. And then that's where we see the Nick Fury thing and then the Winter Soldier chase. Mm-hmm. But then this movie completely changes. It was like, cool, that was a superhero movie. Now we're going to throw that away, because this is where it turns into the spy game. This is where
it turns into
Harrison Ford in The Fugitive. That's what it feels
like.
They go on the run.
Do you know what? I'd not actually realised that. That is very accurate.
Like,
it
this becomes the second part. Like, that first part is like, you know, a James Bond movie. The lift scene.
I fucking love the lift scene. That is a John Wick style, before even John Wick. That is such a brutal fight scene, because it is Steve Rogers getting, quite honestly, the shit kicked into him. And he can't really do anything about it to begin with, obviously. And they're electrocuting him, they're punching him, they're kicking him. And that's when he fucking dishes it out.
The magnets.
Yeah.
On the,
it's when he, like, jumps up and forces the magnets off the
wall. That's where you see his strength.
Yeah. And that's using his feet, because he's, like, pushing. That's fucking great. But the bit that gets me is the overhead shot. He stomps on the shield, flicks it up, and catches it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Perfect way to end that scene.
Yeah, definitely.
Fall-ish. Then it literally turns into, as I said before, it's got so many hints of the heat in there.
Yeah.
But it's,
which now really makes me want
to
see
not the heat, because it doesn't have anything to do with Melissa McCarthy.
No, but I actually kind of want a Michael Mann directed MCU movie now. I kind of want to see what that would look like. Do you know what I mean?
They can't trust anyone. It's bleak as fuck. Black Widow is incredible. It's like she's guiding a child. She's like, kiss me.
and he's like, what?
is that moment where he's embarrassed over a kiss. This is a man who's been killing people.
And
this
he's
is
embarrassed
a man
about kissing.
Who's nearly 100 years old, and he's embarrassed about kissing. In terms of Steve Rogers' love interest, another thing which I was like, it stood out to me today so much. Why is this pissing me off so much? Yeah. Is when he goes to see Peggy. Yeah. And the makeup on Peggy is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, so good.
Uh-huh.
She's got perfect teeth. She's literally got perfect teeth. Like, watch that scene again and try not to look at her teeth. It's so off-putting in that where she's like, oh, Steve. And I'm like, you've got better teeth than me, love, and you're dying. Like, you're so old. You wouldn't even have teeth.
Please don't ruin that scene for me. It's mate,
I've just ruined it for you. I love that scene, but I was watching it back today and I was like, my God, like, her teeth are fucking perfect.
A dick. Very maturing candidate.
Yeah, and it's the...
I mean, even Tony calls him maturing candidate in Civil War.
Even before we get to the big kind of like, you know, it's Hydra pulling the strings that we get from Zola up. But right up until that, you're like, they've got to find this clue and then get this clue and get... It felt so natural. Like, that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah. I love the mall scene where she's hacking in an Apple store.
And the guy comes up and goes, do you need any help there? Yeah. Where are you going? Oh, yeah, we're going on our honeymoon to New Jersey.
So romantic.
Oh, my God.
No, it's the, if I run in these shoes, they're going to fall off, that Steve Rogers comes out with.
I love my favorite part of that whole scene is where he goes like this, specimen.
And walks off. Yeah. It's amazing.
When we get to the bunker, when we get back to his original base, like, I love the little scene where he's like looking at the flagpole and he sees young Steve Rogers looking back at him.
It's kind of cute. It's kind of not paying homage as such, but just remembering the past and seeing where it's going from there. I love the scene where he confronts Zola.
Oh, mate, the Zola scene was... I'm sorry, I know I've, like, linked so many movies to this, but it was original Tron. Like, it was 80s technology, like, there's no way this is going to work, and then USB, boom, turns everything on.
Yeah.
How clever is Zola?
Do you know what I quite liked, though, is when Black Widow says, oh, do you want to play a game? That has two references to it. It's so double-edged, it's brilliant. It has War Games, which, self-explanatory, and Saw, also self-explanatory.
But then he references it. Steve is like, I've seen Saw. Like, he literally is like, I'm not stupid. Like,
I've seen nothing.
But great. When we were talking about Thor and we were talking about how not to do exposition, and how not to fill people in and how not to kind of flesh out a world, Zola does it perfectly.
Yeah.
In 45 seconds, Zola explains why Steve Rogers can never be part of S.H.I.E.L.D. again, why Hydra are the realest threat to anyone on Earth. Honestly, straight up, think about...
We're talking physical plane, we're talking, you know, real
they're
world.
They're everywhere, man.
They are everywhere.
They are everywhere. Yeah. Like, and that's what I love about it. It was very Secret Invasion without it being Secret Invasion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even before I read Steve Rogers number one, where there was Hail Hydra, those words out of Steve Rogers' mouth. I'm heartbroken, but I love it.
Have you read Secret Empire?
Yeah.
It's shit.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But that moment is great. I'm not denying it.
I've never, with that, just to go off on a tangent with the Steve Rogers comment, I've never been so on board and so off board with a comic within three issues.
Oh, yeah, same.
First issue, I was like, I am in. I fully back it. So down. By issue three, I was like, I'm not reading this anymore.
I've read it all. I did get the trade just because I needed to know. I did need to know how it worked out. It worked out terribly.
Yeah, it's awful. But I did love that kind of reveal at that moment. Zola does it perfectly. And again, we mentioned it when we on our Captain America First Avenger one. Such an homage to the Kirby design of Zola.
It was
so perfectly done.
Perfectly translated and updated to our time frame, I thought. It was a great way of honouring the robotic Zola.
Absolutely.
That we all know and love.
The next section of this movie is the heartstrings moment. It is the first real fight between Bucky and Captain America. Mm-hmm. And it felt so huge. This fight, choreography.
That is in the middle of a street.
An hour into a movie
where
you'd had all this action going on, but to have a fist fight in the middle of a street.
Yeah.
It was...
For a Marvel movie as well.
It was so choreographed so well. And there were those little Easter eggs of him picking up the shield.
Yeah.
There were... It just felt real. Again, though, like, when we were saying earlier, like, there's nothing fantastical about this. I could see that fight in a James Bond movie. Like, and I keep linking it back because I think that's mostly, me and Eamon watch a lot of movies, but I think that's mostly what the main movie goer would get from this. It is very James Bond.
Yeah, I think that's what the Russos were really going for. The political grounded spy element, which, as we can clearly see, works a fucking treat.
And the mask reveal. Oh, when the mask comes off and the look from the sexiest man other than Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, for God's sake.
sexiest man, Sebastian Stan.
I mean,
Bucky Barnes.
Yeah, man, he's a pretty good-looking man, really, isn't he?
It's, but that moment is perfectly played. Like, because you think, if Bucky had have hesitated at that moment, you'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake. But he doesn't.
It's the line.
Rogers goes, Bucky? And then
instantly
he's like, tries to shoot him. Like,
first he says, who's Bucky?
And then tries to shoot him straight away.
That's the bit that really pulls on the heartstrings, because you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. They've really messed with him. Good. It's fucking great. Dude.
I like that there was like, oh shit, like he does remember him, like he is asking questions when they take Winter Soldier back to the base after he's had the shield pummeled through his arm, which was so much fun. But again, another classic example of how the Russos can smash exposition. Mm-hmm. Oh, how did Bucky get like this? How did Bucky get here? Like, so quickly, it's like, we got him here, this is what we did to him, this is how we programmed him, boom. And like, it, do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like water off a duck's back. Like, it was so quick and in and out. And you're like, okay, now I'm filled in.
Yeah, and I think that's largely down to the writing of the film. Mm. So it's Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, who also did Civil War.
Yeah. Now, I mean, those two movies feel so alike.
But I'm going to tell you something really interesting. Mm-hmm. They also wrote Thor, The Dark World.
Really?
Yeah. So what went wrong?
They clearly learned from their mistakes. Maybe, yeah. They wrote Thor and was like, we can do that better. But there was so much like perfect comedy that came from the Russos in this, that I think, if you've ever watched Community, you know how clever it is. You know how meta it is. You know, like, they put Easter eggs in something that even shouldn't have Easter eggs in. You know, like that's how clever they are. Yeah. I think that they maybe looked at a script and was like, "Well, we can alter this slightly." You know,
we can spruce this up.
Yeah,
a bit.
Exactly. Yeah. What was great is this is Captain America's movie. Yeah, it really is. And Captain America, the movies are better at this than anyone else. Yeah, is the Falcon, Black Widow, Agent 13, Nick Fury to a certain degree, all feel equal team members. I feel like we've assembled a team. Like, they each have their own particular skills to get done. Like, the Falcon isn't his sidekick.
No, like, he's partner.
Yeah, and mate, he's flying around taking on a gunship himself.
Bear in mind, he's not a literal superhero in the way that Steve Rogers is. His is just an experimental flight suit, which is fucking... I love the way they bring the Falcon into it.
It's being perfect.
Being a special flight suit as part of the military rescuing people.
And it makes sense as well. Like, again, when that was introduced... It wasn't introduced in a way that you're like, oh, I'm watching a superhero movie again now.
Yeah,
it felt so real. I felt like,
It felt more like a sci-fi. That's part of it.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison. Really. I just thought the way they brought Falcon to the 21st century is perfect.
And it works really well.
Yeah,
Black Widow was integral.
Oh, but going back to the third act, this is the superhero... Yeah, you know,
this is where you do feel a bit more superhero when like Falcon is throwing Steve Rogers between helicarriers.
Cannonball special style.
I mean, that was great. What felt really good about this fight, is we had a villain, Winter Soldier, who you didn't want to die.
You didn't want him to lose.
You didn't want him to win, but you didn't want him ended. And to a certain degree, he's put like 4 or 5 bullets. Towards the end of the movie, like, he's put 4 or 5 bullets in Captain America.
And I think this is an example of a villain done so right, because the audience literally cares about the villain in a way that isn't really done as much in the MCU, aside from, say, Loki, because Dav's now looking all aroused and excited. I just think that the way that they've... Marvel again have put in the hard work with the previous film and set up Bucky as a hero to then show his fall just brings this fight so much more closer to home and give it a dramatic weight that really punches you and shoots you in the gut, quite frankly.
Mate, Steve Rogers would have died in this movie had Bucky not pulled him out the wall.
Oh yeah, without doubt.
Like, you're going into Civil War from that moment going, I like Bucky, but that he is so fundamentally flawed. Now, before they get to that final act, there's that the Stan Lee cameo is perfect. Like, Anthony Mackie goes, are you wearing that? He goes, when you go to war, you need a uniform.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the film, we see Steve going around the Smithsonian on an exhibit pretty much about himself, which is very self-centered, if you want to look at it. And he sees his old costume on mannequin and the mannequins of the Howling Commandos. And when he says he needs a uniform, he goes back to the Smithsonian and it cuts to Stan Lee as a security guard walking through, and he comes across the Captain America exhibit.
And he's like, oh man, I'm going to get fired.
Because the suit's missing off his mannequin. It's brilliant. I love it.
And what I liked about it as well is that is very kind of like, you know, Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
But the minute he started fighting it, like when you see it on the mannequin, you're like, that is really Captain America. But when he starts fighting in it, again, you don't feel like it's not practical.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I really felt that. Like, it's really good.
I think quickly we need to talk about Robert Redford.
Okay, go.
Now, this for me was where it really went into the political spy thriller. Mm-hmm. For anybody that has ever watched a Robert Redford film in the 70s, they're all political spy thrillers. I loved Pierce as a villain.
Oh, he was great.
Because he wasn't, like, maniacal.
No,
He wasn't ham-fisted.
And for 80% of this movie, Steve Rogers trusted Pierce more than he trusted Fury or Black Widow.
Without a doubt. And there was a sort of charismatic nature to him that was great, especially when he was dealing with the World Security Council at the beginning. Mm. You did kind of feel like you almost had a camaraderie with Pierce, because he was kind of just like, fine, fuck it, whatever, do whatever, it's fine. And it was just, he was quite amusing, but in a bureaucratic way, which sounds almost contradicting.
He's like the sort of person that Steve Rogers salutes to. He would be the sort of good man, in quotation marks, that Steve Rogers would seek out to work with. And that's what makes it so poignant. You know, someone like Nick Fury isn't essentially who Steve Rogers would align himself. He cuts corners. He does what he feels is necessary. He goes beyond orders, that sort of thing. That's not what Steve Rogers is about.
No. Like, he's by the book.
He's by the book and morally by the book.
Yeah.
Pierce comes across as that sort of character, and that's what makes it so poignant. You know, where he's last breath, and on his last breath, Hail Hydra. Like, that felt huge to me. I know when I said it earlier that Hydra, the biggest threat, you were a bit like, what? But honestly, it's this guy's, he's the head of this organization. Yeah. He's Hydra, and he's got to the head of this organization. He knows how far it is. His last dying breath, he goes, Hail Hydra. For me, those two words, like in comic books, are so visceral.
Yeah.
And I felt that they managed to put that across here and take it from Nazis and make it, oh shit, like now is just as visceral as it was when it was the Red Skull. Yeah. The other thing is the scene where they're targeting everywhere, the Easter eggs throughout that scene, where it's like targeting Tony Stark, targeting Bruce Banner,
targeting Stephen Strange.
Yeah, it was so
beautiful.
It was so well done.
Because it hangs on it for almost like half a second.
Yeah.
So if you are a everyday moviegoer, it won't affect you. You'll
see the Stark Tower and you'll be like, boom, yeah,
get it. You'll see Banner maybe, okay, cool. But it's the Stephen Strange that the fans started to lose their shit over. Mm. I mean, that's a great way of foreshadowing something.
Well, they did it originally with Wakanda, didn't they? Like, it's on the board
in Iron Man 2.
Yeah. I know you're a massive fan of this movie. What didn't you like?
Oh, God.
Come on. I know you're drawn into this, but you need to kind of...
I know, I do need to. I need to get my critical head on. Okay. The beginning chemistry between Black Widow and Captain America, right? I didn't like that they almost implied a relationship of sorts. There was an obvious sexual chemistry there. Even the kiss, yes, it was a plot point.
I think that was more down to maybe Steve Rogers just being excuse the term, but just a massive virgin. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was just like that sort of guy. Like, and
but it's the scene.
It's
in the
undeniable
car.
That Natasha Romanoff is a beautiful woman. So someone like Steve Rogers would be like, but his heart's with Peggy.
Yeah, like, but it's the scene in the car where she says, "I'll be whatever you want me to be." Whoa, what the fuck? No, she'll be who she wants to be, not who she needs to be for a bloke. I think it just
felt a bit that, like, you know, I agree with that to a certain degree. I took that scene completely differently. I think that she was talking about how she buries herself and how she needs to bury the past, and she'd be like, "I'll be whoever you need be so I can just forget." Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's what that was. She's racked with guilt in this movie, and yes, it hasn't boiled up to where it does in Civil War yet, but she's racked with guilt in this movie. I'm like, the only thing I can say bad about this movie, and I have to be honest, is there are some certain CGI moments that wound me up. I've already talked about Peggy's teeth, that pissed me off. The scene where we get a flashback of Bucky and Steve Rogers as the 5'4" Steve Rogers is worse done than it was in the first Avenger.
Yeah, it was a bit rushed, I think.
And that really annoyed me.
Which is a shame, because it is quite a heartfelt scene.
The scene where Zola blows him up, the CGI on that explosion is fucking terrible.
Yeah. It's the overhead shot where the whole thing collapses.
It's just awful. For me, those are the only points in this that I really felt let down. Now we can get to the post-credit scenes.
So the first one is where we see two certain twins.
Yeah.
Cells.
Lost my shit, mate.
So did I, because it was the first time we saw Aaron Taylor-Johnson as Quicksilver and Elizabeth Olsen as Scarlet fucking Witch.
I was more excited about Scarlet Witch because I've loved Scarlet Witch, like, for so long. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about it, well, as an X-Men. I've seen Quicksilver. I've seen Quicksilver done, like, speedster. I don't really care. I wondered about the Hex powers. I wanted to know more about them. I love the magic.
Yeah, and in a similar way to the multiple Captain America castings, bringing Scarlet Witch into the MCU just opens the doors to a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm putting her in a red leather jacket rather than a 60s sexy jumpsuit. It was inspired.
I quite liked that she had a goth vibe to her. Do you know what I mean? Like, with the hand gloves and the black skirt. She rocked it.
I thought the Hex powers looked so cool as well. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. It got me. It was Baron von Strucker.
Yes.
There is a small part of me that's still like, oh, but it's not X-Men. But, like, you know, granted, she is amazing. And you know what? Like, in the first 10 minutes of Civil War, you are so happy that Elizabeth Olsen is in this franchise.
Perfect casting.
Her acting is phenomenal. Because this is the beauty of this movie.
Yeah.
Is I finished this movie last night. And I put on Civil War straight away.
I don't blame you.
Like, I literally, it makes you want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, if you know what goes on in Ultron, you can go straight into Ultron, but it's the perfect 1-2 combo of Winter Soldier, Civil War.
Yeah, you can
it
just
carries
watch
on
three.
That vibe.
Second post-credits scene is the same Smithsonian exhibit we saw previously, and there's a man in a baseball cap, and it's Bucky Barnes.
Again, sets you up so hard. That is the outfit he's rocking in Civil War.
It is.
Like, it's so good. He knows something's wrong with him. Yeah. He doesn't quite know what's going on. Right, rate it.
Look, you're going to really judge me if I give it a 10, aren't you?
No.
Because I'm going to have to give it a 10.
It's not a perfect movie, though.
Don't get me wrong. Like, this is the thing.
Because there is a perfect movie in the MCU.
There are a couple of perfect movies in the MCU.
No, there's one.
We're going to fall out so much.
That's the thing, though. We're now getting to the point where how do you score anything from here? Realistically, how do you score anything from here lower than an 8? Like, honestly where we are. The next episode we're doing after this is Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah?
Yeah.
How can you score that lower than an 8?
You can't.
How can you score, like, an absolute shocker? Ant-Man, how can you give Ant-Man lower than an 8?
I think,
how are we in a world where Ant-Man is gonna be,
I know, right?
Like,
I think for me, I'm gonna go 9.5 with my critical head on.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, there is the CGI issue, there is the stereotypical superhero ending, but plot-wise, personally, I feel is one of the strongest, if not the strongest, in the MCU. The political aspect, the spy aspect, the huge reveal that Hydra is still alive and very much kicking is phenomenal. It's the moment that I, even though I already loved the MCU, it's the moment where I saw Marvel taking things in a new direction that was truly inspired. And I loved it. I loved Cap's costume to begin with, Secret Soldier.
Yeah, it's so good.
Is fucking awesome. I loved Falcon. I loved Black Widow. I'm going to go 9.5.
Okay. I'm going to go with 9.
Okay.
I'm going in at 9. In this movie list, there is a 9.5 hiding in there, and there is a 10. I think this movie definitely, if I hadn't have had Civil War, which essentially is pretty much Avengers 2.5.
Obviously.
This would be straight up one of the best solo movies from any of the MCU cast. Like,
definitely. Yeah, this is the first truly great Marvel sequel.
Absolutely.
To begin with.
So, that's it. That's us gushing about Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Next time, as we've mentioned, we're going to be discussing Guardians of the Galaxy. Who the fuck knew that was ever going to happen?
Crazy. I love it.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.